from Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Not quite Monday, but it is kind of Monday. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. Hit us up on that. Hit us up on that text line. We'll respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. I got a ton of texts I got to get to here in just a moment. Coming up in about a half hour, Sam Roberts from Coleman Daily running polls. We'll see what he's seeing out there, find out what he's seeing on the election cycle that's still underway here. We're a week into it, actually. So all the campaigning, and it's really heated up. I talked about this in the last hour between Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. Hudson trying to make a late inning jab here. And as well, Jay Mitchell, Catherine Robertson. And the other one we're watching, John Wall and Wes Allen. So stay tuned. We'll get into that. Squirrel Vereen. Shamar Figures is really showing his local ignorance, thinking the tunnels are not valuable. The bacon is especially crucial and practically a historic landmark. Well, here's what he says his motivation for funding to include funding for future tunnel modifications. We don't want to be in a position where we have to go through the experience we've had to go through with this bridge. We spent 15 years trying to secure federal funding. We want all those funding streams open and be able to move at that time. So this is what this is. Nothing more, nothing less. And this bill only comes around once every 5 years. And so we just go ahead and clear that out and be looking toward the future. I just think, whatever you say, whatever we do with the tunnels, it is a loser to say we need to close the tunnels. He may be right, but it is an absolute loser. People, I mean, there's a couple of things here. The accessibility in and out of downtown Mobile make the Bankhead Tunnel a viable option that people going to work for Baldwin County who work in downtown Mobile will still use it. It's not as if it's just this dormant roadway that no one uses. Now, the Wattles Tunnels, once you get the bridge up and going, maybe there is a case. But, it has some time left on it. This is this philosophy that existed under the Biden administration with Buttigieg and his DOT that the infrastructure we built in these big cities served the purpose of moving people out of the big cities, that it de-social engineered them and it created suburbs. Is there some of this going on here where the flight to suburbia? Do you want to make it hard for people to live on the Eastern Shore and work in Mobile? Is there some of that going on here? That the growth of Baldwin County, I think there are people, urban planners, who really believe that the growth in Baldwin County should be taking place in Mobile. Something to think about. DEI text or someone tell Jerry that the Wallace Tunnels are over 52. He is right. David. Just why I suspected chaos in Alabama's election, so does the federal court ruling, if upheld, mean everyone that chose not to vote last week's primary election because they thought there would be a special election in August, get their votes disenfranchised now, do those votes now have actionable claim in courts, even though even more questions. If we're supposedly going to have a primary in August, we just have to use the court-drawn maps. What's the legal rationale for not letting us use the legislative drawn maps? So do the losers of last week's congressional primaries in effective districts have an actionable legal cause arguing that their votes were disenfranchised because their voters did not go out to vote because they knew there would be a primary in August? Want figures political base opposed to tunnel down the tunnels? Tell them it will force more traffic through Africatown. They will immediately oppose it. It will. You're right about that. My problem with the Africatown Bridge, there's just not a great way to get to it. That's why I don't route a lot of traffic. I mean, I guess if you're coming from the north and you're going to the Baldwin County, that's when I use it. But you need some kind of connectivity from 65 a little further south than 165. And there's just not a good way. I mean, who wants to get on 60? You're coming, you know, from Mississippi. Do you want to take 65 all the way up to, like, Saraland or Chickasaw? Get on 165, head back south. Get off at the Africatown Bridge exiting to go over the bridge. And then, once you get back down to where the causeway and the bayway begin, you're not allowed to get on I-10 there. You have to drive down past Felix's all the way to that other junction to get on the interstate. And it's just not, it's not designed properly for a lot of traffic. Now, once upon a time, guys, before the Bankhead Tunnel was open, there was the old Cochrane Drawbridge, and you had to do that. That was the only way across. And even predating that, you had to take ferries. I mean, there are people listening to this show right now who would be thinking, like, well, you know, we got Amtrak back. Let's bring the ferries back. Heck, let's build a bike trail to Fairhope. Can we get the the wagon and buggy back? But we seem to be going kind of in the opposite direction with some of this. I have a bunch of old Alabama highway maps. One of the coolest ones is from the 20s. This shows the three ferry routes and the old Spanish Trail. That's how you had to go by automobile. Let's continue on here. Mike, Bethesda figures probably doesn't fully understand the Bayway issues, and understandably so. It's difficult to understand our situation when you're a carpetbagger lobbyist from Maryland. I think it's just a blind spot, so I can figure. Somebody's in his ear about this, probably somebody at the Port Authority. Whatever the Port Authority does for government affairs, listen to me. Whatever the Port Authority is doing, y'all need to, you guys in this racket of government affairs need to mimic it. Because they seem to have, they seem to be very, very, very effective. They're very good at their jobs. A long time, for decades. They're able to woo a lot of people. I don't know what they do. I know some of the people who work for them. But they fly under the radar a lot of times. I mean, they'll still advertise and but they are good at their jobs. They get a lot of things that I just don't see, like, where the public support, public buy-in is for it. Ultra Runner. I'm worried about this after reading the Sotomayor's Calais dissent. She wrote the district court Mitch Free on remand to decide for itself whether Calais has any bearing, blah, 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 blah. Looks like Manasco and Gay took her advice, unlike Assad Piker advocated for violent revolutions after Calais. What legal options do people have against rogue judges? So glad we didn't anger Manasco and her gang by going 7-0. Imagine what that would have done then. Yeah, but the minority dissent is not legally binding. And that's the problem. People like to tout that, but it doesn't matter, the dissent. And what it matters is what was in the majority. Because the majority prevails. There's no precedent set by the minority dissent. Jason. Sometimes judges on the Supreme Court are just wrong and they're outvoted. Jason writes, Jeff, what's your thoughts on the PAX Accorded race today? Do you think Tallarico is a serious contender for the winner? I've been hearing this every single year. Since Texas went from Democrat to Republican, it was always, better watch out. Texas could flip any moment now. James Tallarico is just a 2026 version of Beto O'Rourke. It'll be close. It'll be interesting. The Republican will prevail. And John Cornyn will lose today. He's outstayed his welcome. He tried to play a game in Texas. A lot of members do this, and they could get away with it. He played a D.C. game. So Lindsey Graham gets away with it. He is the guy who is the textbook example here. Where you do things that you're in a state that's ideologically Republican, conservative, whatever. And it doesn't hold up. You act one way in Washington, D.C., and you act another way when you're back at home. And it was just not long for this world that John Cornyn was going to lose a race. Especially in this era of Trump populism. Tim, Jeff, do you see Shamari Figures committing political suicide? I just think he's wrong on this one. I don't think he gets it. I think he thinks he gets it. But you see, gotta give a hand to the Port Authority Government Affairs people. Unnamed texture. There are a bunch of us who are tired of taking it. There are a bunch of us who are tired of people taking advantage of working in Mobile while living in Baldwin County. And then complaining about our public social system when they take their paycheck back to Baldwin County and pay taxes. And then brag about how great their school system is. But that isn't a reason to close the tunnels. If Figures votes to close the tunnel, it's just his way of giving everyone else the middle finger on his way out of office. Congress can barely keep the lights on. DHS has been shut down for like 4 months now. This is not going to pass. But what's interesting, it's a very good anti-Figures attack ad. Because people understand this. I mean, people really do understand this more than you know. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Sam Roberts coming up here in just a few minutes. Dave, federal court blocks Alabama's midterm gerrymandering plan to blow for Republicans. Okay, we already went through that. And then did the African Tail Bridge get half built by a certain contractor that went broke and another contractor had to finish a job? That sounds about right. I was a child. I remember when they were rebuilding that or what. Yeah. Do you guys remember the early 80s, like the hazardous cargo had to go all the way up the Dolly Parton Bridge and then south again? I remember the signs. That's about par for the course, though, Dave, in Alabama. Long-standing history of that happening, too. We've always had a hard time building big things in this state. Too many kickbacks and people going to jail, I guess. I don't know. Be dark. It looks like Figures wants a lot of traffic through Africa Town. It might be cheaper than a bridge. And then Rick. Rick has a lot to say. Shabari is a joke. SLB is clueless and as goofy as a runover dog. There's an old saying of Shabari was the answer. Dear God, what was the question? I don't know. I mean, I'm still... It's not as if he's really set himself apart. And he hasn't done anything completely embarrassing. He's not like Maxine Waters or somebody like that. I think he's far more serious about this than Terry Sewell. But the problem I have, it's not so much Shabari Figures, it's the district he's in. This federal court, the same federal court lecturing us about being a bunch of racists and electing a bunch of racists to the Alabama legislature, drew a map that was supposed to be +2, +3, somewhere in that neighborhood, and it was +9. And there's no accountability there. The special master that the federal courts use, there's no accountability that they got it wrong. Maybe you could take him to court. I don't know. Can you take a court to court? But that map was not what it lived up, what it was sold as. It didn't live up to be that. It is a Democrat district. Now, I'm getting a bunch of text about this, that this opens up the doorway for Alabama to draw a 7-0 map. But I still don't think they're going to get there. I think these are the two options here. My guess, guys, is that the Supreme Court is just going to take exception to this because, while it's not a direct shot at the Supreme Court's Kelly decision, it does sort of undermine the spirit of it. It undermines the spirit of it, and there was a rush here. That, I mean, they worked all weekend on this so they could drop it this morning to reverse what the legislature did. And I would take it seriously if these judges had not, like, decided they needed to put, like, little petty remarks in their injunction about the Alabama legislature. Petty remarks casting aspersions on the legislature. There's no reason to do that. But it demonstrates that there's an axe to grind here. And I think it's clouded the judgment of these judges. That they're not, you know, pure judicially philosophizing here. They're philosophizing here. They got a political axe to grind. They don't like the way the legislature is going about it, particularly the state of Alabama and General Marshall are going about this. And so this is their way of getting back. And they don't seem to care about the repercussions from the Supreme Court at all. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. We are weak for living. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Welcome back to the Jump Force Show. Let's talk 1065.
Not knowing where I'm bound.
251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program? You'll be able to add text line. So it'll come on the program. Will Hampson from PT Public Affairs, former radio colleague of mine, but also the vice president there. We'll talk to him about what the outlook is now, especially with Texas today to be decided, looking like a cornin. But some other places around the country to keep an eye on Election Day in various places around the United States. Joining us now, however, we're going to talk Alabama politics, Alabama election politics in particular. But Sam Roberts, our good friend from the Coleman Daily, joins us. Sam, how are you?
Doing good. How about you?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. Thanks for hopping on. Things where we let them on Tuesday, and we got a good kind of sense of you know, the races. And I guess the three that everyone are watching are obviously the Senate race, the lieutenant gubernatorial race, and the AG race. We'll start with the Senate, and it's already gotten a little chippy, but you said you thought that to keep an eye on Hudson, that if there was somebody who could beat Barry Moore between Marshall and Hudson, it was more likely to be Hudson.
Yes, and I still do believe that. Now, before Election Day, my prediction was that if Jared Hudson was in the runoff with Barry Moore, that he would defeat him come the June 19th or the June 16th runoff. I'm starting to lean towards Barry Moore closing that seat out, just because the margin from the primary election last week was a little bit more than what I was expecting. I was expecting Hudson to be within 10 points, and he wasn't. I do still think it was a very strong showing for Hudson, considering that he came into the race as basically a no-name who had just ran for sheriff of Jefferson County and defeated the acting attorney general of Alabama and Steve Marshall, who was initially the front runner in that race. So definitely nothing to be ashamed of if you're Hudson. And I still think he has a chance in the election. If Steve Marshall would have been in the runoff, I would have said he never had a chance. But if Hudson can fundraise with Moore, I do think he can be competitive in the race. And I even think, I'm going to say it's going to be more like a 53-47 election for Moore, but it's going to be, if Hudson can fundraise and compete with Moore on that side of it, then it's going to get interesting.
Where did Marshall go wrong, now that we could kind of do an autopsy here? It evaporated for him. And, we could play, I guess, Tuesday morning quarterback here, but he had it. Was it the Trump endorsement? What was it that where he went kind of south?
You know, it seems like the best day for Steve Marshall as far as poll numbers were the day that he announced. He jumped into the race, and he was a kind of the unanimous front runner last fall when he first announced. And it's just he just never has gained any traction across the state. I know he's been out campaigning, but just for whatever reason, voters have just never attached on to the idea of Steve Marshall being the next United States Senator from Alabama. Barry Moore, the Trump endorsement, definitely, it shot him up and got him in the 30s. And then from there, you had Barry Moore's the front runner, and then Steve Marshall second. And then it's just Jared Hudson. Everywhere he goes, he gains more supporters. He's a hard guy not to like. He's young. He's people just like him. And everywhere Hudson has went on this campaign trail, he's left with more support. I like Steve Marshall, but I'm kind of thinking that for Steve Marshall, it's the opposite. Everywhere he goes, he loses support. It seems like it's kind of been like that over the past few months, as Steve Marshall's numbers have consistently trended downwards. Hudson's consistently trended up. And then Moore was pretty stagnant the last few months, but he had earned 35-40% of the vote a few months back. And everything else was just settling the debate for who was going to be second place last Tuesday.
What do you tell? If you're advising Jared Hudson, what's the best way to raise the ceiling? Is it run up the score in Birmingham, and because it's going to be a low turnout event here in June, Or do you try to win where Marshall did well? Do you look for places where you were weak, or do you just shore up where you did well?
So with if you're Hudson, I mean, you can, if you're Jared Hudson, I mean, it doesn't matter if you buy a house in the Wiregrass and live there the next 3 weeks, you're not going to get your numbers up. Barry Moore is going to absolutely dominate South Alabama. He's going to dominate the Wiregrass area, and he's going to win by Mobile by a healthy margin. Nothing you can do to change that. That's set in stone, and it's going to happen. But what you can fix, if you're Jared Hudson, you can continue the strong showing that you had in the Birmingham TV market last Tuesday night. Now, he had strong numbers all throughout the Birmingham TV market on May 19th, but they have to be stronger. They were a little bit under what I was expecting. For example, in Coleman, I think Hudson ended up around 39%. I thought he was going to get 45%. That was kind of the story across the whole state. Hudson was consistently about 5 and 6 points under where I was expecting him to be at. In the runoff election, he's got to get his numbers. He done really good in the primary, but he's got to do very good in Birmingham to be competitive. But the more important thing about this is Hudson absolutely cannot afford to lose in the Huntsville area. He has to have really strong numbers anywhere around Birmingham, Jefferson County, Coleman, Walker, Blunt, all of the counties surrounding the Birmingham area and in the Birmingham TV market. But he has to go up to North Alabama to the Huntsville area and win. He cannot lose there. He has to win Marshall County. He has to win Madison County, Limestone County, Morgan County. Those are counties that where it was a lot of these counties up in North Alabama, Barry Moore was winning. And if you're Jared Hudson, that cannot happen on June 16th, or there's just no path to victory. You have to really have a great showing in Birmingham, and you have to find a way to win counties in the Huntsville TV market, because there's nothing you can do to change what's going to happen in South Alabama.
I was surprised how strong Barry Moore was north, Tennessee Valley, especially in the Shoals, where he won by bigger margins. But whatever he did, like you said, he did very, very well in the Wiregrass, and he did well in our neck of the woods. But, I mean, whatever he did to try to win around Huntsville really worked for him.
That's where I was caught off guard. I was expecting. Now, I did think the areas around Madison County, the Shoals, I thought they were going to be close, and I thought that Moore would win some of those counties, but I did not expect to see some of the margins I saw in the Huntsville TV market. That's something, if you're Jared Hudson, you're the he's the central North Alabama candidate in Jefferson County, and you're against somebody from the Wiregrass, you can absolutely, in no circumstance, afford to lose the Madison County, Limestone County, the Shoals area. That's areas you have to find a way to win June 16th. I'm afraid that Hudson is spending a little bit too much time in South Alabama, because there's absolutely nothing he can do down there to fix that. He's going to lose South Alabama. Nothing that's going to change it. But he could win Huntsville. He could win the Shoals. I'm not sure that he's going to, but that is doable for a candidate from North Jefferson County going against Barry Moore from South Alabama. And that's something that he has to find a way to do between now and June 16th. The only thing is, I'm just not sure if he's going to have the funds to compete with Barry Moore in doing it. I know he's raised a lot of money, but Moore has really raised a lot of money. He has the Trump endorsement. You know, that's kind of my thoughts on it. But I will say, if you swap the two, if you gave Moore the resources that Hudson's had and you gave Hudson the resources that Moore has had along with the Trump endorsement, Jared Hudson would absolutely blow Barry Moore out of the water in this election.
Lieutenant gubernatorial race, surprised by John Wall's success. I mean, I think he outperformed polls. He did well in parts of the state. I mean, obviously we expected him to do well in Limestone County and the surrounding areas. But he absolutely, I think he had probably about a 10-point, you know, based on the polling going into Tuesday, he swung it like 20 points because he was expected to do 20s, and he hit 40%.
You're correct. And, you know, polls have consistently shown John down 6 or 7 points leading into Monday. But then on Monday, May 18th, Donald Trump tweeted and reinforced his endorsement of John Wall for lieutenant governor of Alabama. You know, throughout the day, there was a lot of media coverage then. A statewide text went out. You had a few things happening on that. And that night, John Wall pulled ahead of Wes Allen, the same group of voters, one day apart. The only thing that happened between the two polls was President Trump doubling down on his endorsement of John Wall for lieutenant governor. That night, we saw John Wall ahead of Wes Allen. We go into the next day, that held, and he was finished in first place heading into the runoff against Wes Allen. So the Trump effect definitely was favorable to John Wall last Monday. It's just he has to hold on to those voters as we head into June 16th.
Because it's hard for me to see the voters for the other candidates, Wadsworth, Pate, Bishop, Tankersley, going to Wes Allen. It just feels like they are probably more prone to go with Wall. But what does Wes Allen need to do here?
You know, Allen, I mean, he's in a bad spot. I know he had to be very shocked at the results last Tuesday, because I think he was fully expecting to be in the driver's seat and have a, you know, I think there was a point just a few weeks ago where Wes Allen was hoping that he was going to find a way to win this thing without a runoff. Now he's going into the runoff in second place. I don't think that 2 weeks back, Wes Allen even considered that, him or his staff considered that as a possibility. So he is definitely in a vulnerable situation here. Right now, John Wall is up on TV all throughout Alabama. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen any TV from Wes Allen over the past few days. So I have a feeling that John Wall is extending his lead right now as we head into June 16th. So if you're Wes Allen, you have to respond quickly before this thing gets a little out of hand.
Yeah, and I just, their attacks just are falling flat. You know, the Muslim thing at the Aniston, I just, and this is sort of the nature of the beast with that campaign, but I don't think it's one of these where you can pull out the trick play here and throw the Hail Mary and score a touchdown to win the game. It does sound like it's sort of just slipping out of his grasp.
I agree. And, you know, one of the main attacks I've seen over the past few days is the allegation saying that John Wall did not vote for President Trump in 2020. I think that is just falling flat on its face, because for anybody who hasn't paid attention, President Trump has doubled down on supporting John Wall for lieutenant governor. So I don't understand why the Wes Allen camp continues to push on that issue when President Trump has publicly came out multiple times and endorsement of John Wall.
Yeah, and just tactically, that's not what he needs to be doing. If you're Wes Allen, I don't even know where to start, but that's not it.
Yeah, it's not been effective. He hasn't cut into John's numbers whatsoever over the past few days. And I think, if anything, John Wall has extended the margin from what we saw last Tuesday. I agree with you. I think voters from the Wadsworth, Bishop, Tankersley, the other campaigns are more frequently going to John Wall heading into this runoff election. So if you're John Wall, I think you're feeling really good about what you're seeing here. But you have to double down on everything and capitalize over the next few weeks and continue growth in your polling numbers as you head into June 16th.
AG's race, you and I talked about, I guess Mitchell was maybe just a smidge closer than I thought he would be to Catherine Robertson, because she really kind of hit the accelerator there in the closing days. But I don't know what changes that race. Pamela Casey's voters, she got a healthy 25%, but at best I see them splitting that 100,000 or so.
I agree. And I don't even think it's a split. I think the majority of the Pamela Casey voters are heading to Catherine Robertson. I do agree with you. Jay Mitchell was a little bit closer than what I was expecting last Tuesday. I actually thought that it was going to be kind of a battle between him and Pamela for second place. He ended up comfortably being in second place and a little bit closer to Catherine than what we were expecting. But in polling leading up to last Tuesday, what we were seeing is that a lot of the Catherine voters because there was a point in time where she was polling at 45 and she got down to 40. The 5% she lost, for the most part, they weren't going to Jay Mitchell. They were going to Pamela Casey. In new polling that we are doing, we are seeing those people that left Catherine to go to Pamela Casey going right back to Catherine Robertson. And not just those voters, it's other voters. The majority of Pamela Casey supporters are heading right to Catherine Robertson at about a 60-40 margin. If you're Jay Mitchell, you have to win those voters over at a 60% margin to be competitive in this runoff election. It's just not happening from what we've seen so far. Catherine definitely has the edge in that election. I know Jay Mitchell's going to raise some money, and he's gonna battle and be competitive. But if you're Catherine Robertson, you're in a really good position here heading into this last few weeks.
Just a couple more real quick, Ag Commissioner. And we knew it was a three-way race. I think Jack Williams, Senator Williams, underperformed just a little bit. But the Corey Hill plurality, I think that's just the power of the Alpha endorsement.
I agree, but I think the Alpha endorsement can only get you so far. In this runoff, I expect Christina McGinnis to have the advantage in available funds heading into the next few weeks. She overperformed last week, but we had seen consistent growth in her polling numbers over the 2 to 3 weeks heading into the election. Really, all the way from March through the 1st of May, Christina had consistently been polling in third place, but the last 2 weeks heading into the election, we did see consistent growth from her and a consistent decline from Jack Williams. I expect heading into this runoff, if you're Corey Hill, you can't rely solely on this Alpha endorsement. You have to be competitive with her and the money that she's going to raise and that she's going to spend here heading into this last few weeks. I expect Christina McGinnis to win that election. I do. It is very close right now in polling. I mean, they're basically neck and neck. But I do expect Christina to gain on the momentum that she had from last Tuesday and to pull it off on June 16th.
Last one, Auditor, the Sorrell, 2-1 victory was a little bit of a surprise.
It was. I was kind of expecting that election to be closer to a 60-40 from Sorrell, and I do think that is an impressive victory if you're Auditor Sorrell, considering that your opponent spent over or nearly $1 million in basically self-funded money in that election. He outspent him. 3-1 or more. So, I mean, that's an impressive victory if you're Sorrell, considering your opponent spent nearly $1 million on his campaign and hundreds of thousands in TV over the couple weeks leading into the May 19th primary election.
Sam, folks want to find you online. Where do they need to look?
You can find us at Coleman Daily. We're primarily on Facebook. We have Instagram and everything too, but our main platforms are social media, so you can find us here in Coleman at Coleman Daily.
Sam, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Why must you live out the song?
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch no bandit run.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show. Up and talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. So come Will Hampson. Election day today in places around the country. We'll get a rundown from him. A few texts here. You're confusing the 3-judge panel with the talented SCROTUS. Good job, DI Texter. Thank you. Mike D's figures is only his mother until he gets his feet planted. Ultra Runner. You have a rogue judge, rogue district court judge angry, and an angry Judge Thomas appalled by their defiance. Meeting in middle is not working. Why isn't this time? Why isn't this the time to go 7-0? It's a good question. I think they missed their opportunity, though. I think they should have gone 7-0 a couple of weeks ago during the special session. But now it is what it is. There was never... Here's the thing, guys, and you lawmakers listening to me, thinking that you could do this with these half measures and fly under the radar and get your way. It's not working. Neither one of these maps they drew in 2023 were acceptable. I get it. You're up against the clock. It's a time crunch. But whatever the calculus is, thinking that if you could kind of do just enough to get by, it's like me in college trying to figure out how to graduate. Just enough. But just enough to set yourself up for failure when you're being graded by this three-judge panel. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. But what I got is my time.